630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
So the Oilers set a 23-man roster today. They will play Vancouver on Wednesday in the first game of the regular season. Get more on that on 630CHED.com, globalnews.ca. Also, the Edmonton Elks will go with Taylor Cornelius at quarterback on Friday against Winnipeg. Reed Wilkins with you. We have a best of edition tonight, and this is a great story here. Recently, I talked to Justin Rayner, who posted a picture on Twitter of him skating. Now, what is so special about that? A guy skating in Canada? Well, in Justin's case, it's very significant. Here's the story.
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's an honor to have you on the show. I think we're going to have a really good chat here. I was not following you on Twitter until within the last 24 hours, and you have a pretty fun Twitter account. And I think people are going to enjoy hearing from you because, you know, first of the first line in your Twitter bio is hockey player turned quadriplegic, LOL. The quadriplegic is not a word a lot of people would laugh out loud at, Justin. Tell us about the decision to throw that in there.
Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of developed a dark sense of humor over the years of dealing with the injury, and you got to laugh at yourself, right? You got to keep going forward, and that's just how I chose to deal with one part of that.
Okay, so let's go back to December 2nd, 2004, just to kind of introduce you to people who maybe don't know your story, or reintroduce you to people who maybe have seen some of the media about you in the past. What happened that night in December of 2004?
Yeah, so I was a bantam hockey player in southern Saskatchewan playing for Cabri Bulldogs at the time. We were in Hodgeville, and I ended up getting on a breakaway and kind of just went down the ice full speed and tried to deke out the goalie and kind of lost my balance while I was shooting and chose to shoot instead of watching where I was falling. And I watched the puck instead of putting my hands up, and I went headfirst into the boards behind the net, unfortunately.
And were you aware immediately something was wrong, or were you knocked out, or what was the sensation sort of as the injury happened?
Yeah, no, basically, like, I looked back at the boards like right before I hit, and I was like, oh man, this is going to hurt. I'm probably going to be winded. Like, a lot of hockey players have hit the boards before and you bounce off and you can't breathe for 30, 40 seconds. And that's kind of what I thought was going to happen. And as soon as I hit the boards, I opened my eyes and I was like, ooh, this is not right. Like, everything from the chin down just went numb and it was throbbing, and my body kind of felt like an accordion going in and out a little bit. So yeah, I definitely knew something bad had happened.
Yeah. And what were the subsequent weeks like? Were you even, I mean, obviously this was an incredibly serious injury. Were you conscious of the initial recovery? Were you sort of aware of what was happening, or were you hospitalized and maybe, I assume because of your condition, there would have been a lot of medication involved. What were the weeks that followed like?
Yeah. So, that night in Hodgeville, I was on the ice for an hour and a half waiting for an ambulance from Swift Current to come. Then they took me to Swift Current Hospital, stabilized me for about 5 hours, and then they put me on a plane to Regina, an air ambulance. And then I was in Regina General Hospital for about 5 months after that. And like the first couple days, I was aware I wasn't allowed to drink anything. So like they would dip like a little straw, like a foam thing in water, and I would suck on that. That was like the only water I could drink, stuff like that. And then like 4 or 5 days in, they did the fusion surgery on my neck. And then for about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks after that, I was in a medically induced coma just to allow the healing process to kind of start.
So, you know, as a teenager, once you... And I know there was a long recovery process, but who helped you through that? I imagine there was a huge mental and attitude adjustment somewhere along the way. How did you get through those steps?
Yeah, it was a combination of a lot of things. Obviously, my family, my mom, my dad, my stepmom, my stepdad, my brothers and sisters, friends coming up to visit all the time. And then obviously the hockey community. I had so many awesome guys come visit me. Josh Harding, Ryan Smith came to visit me when he was back in Moose Jaw visiting family, because this is, of course, the lockout year. So a lot of guys were available to come visit. And that really boosted my spirits a lot as a 13-year-old. So it was a combination of a lot of people. And then further along in the journey as you go, like the closer you get to going to rehab, you start meeting guys in chairs. And I met a bunch of guys that were like Paralympians and just guys that were really getting on with their life and living it to the fullest that really showed me that life can go on.
All right. Well, and I want to talk to you about some of the things you are doing in your life currently.
For sure.
But before we maybe dive into that, I do want to ask about something very specific. And you posted something on Twitter last night. I saw it while I was hosting Inside Sports. So it would have been about 23, 24 hours ago you threw this up. Look, I've retweeted the video. I'll let you tell the story. What happened? Tell me about this, you being in skates.
Yeah, so basically I hadn't looked at that pair of skates since the night I got hurt, obviously. That was the last time I saw that particular pair of skates in, 16 years. And I got the opportunity to go out on the ice here in Regina last winter. First Steps in the U of R hockey team put on a let's have a go day kind of thing. And First Steps Wellness Center here in Regina has the equipment, which you saw me in. It's got like the sling and stuff. And yeah, I just went for it. Well, I didn't just go for it. It took some convincing, obviously, from friends and stuff saying go for it. But once I got out there, man, you can tell in the video, I just have a giant smile on my face. And it was really healing for me, really emotional. I had a good cry at the edge of the rink before going out. So
yeah, amazing. And those were your same skates you wore when you were playing Bantam.
That's the exact same pair. Took them out of my hockey bag and took them to the sharpener. Almost had to get new blades on them because they were rusted out. And strapped them on and went out there.
I'm sure they smelled great, eh?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Great. Yeah. You can imagine 16 years sitting there festering in sweat and
in the hockey bag. Yeah. Most
they were pretty terrible. I'm
usually 16 minutes in a hockey bag is enough to get pretty rank. So, watching your video and like I said, you are a quadriplegic, but do you have like kind of, as you're doing that, is there some movement? Is there some sensation? Like, what can you sort of do right now?
Yeah. So I was very fortunate after my injury to, start to gain a lot of movement back. At first the doctor told me that I was never going to move a muscle again below my chin, basically. He said I would probably be on a ventilator the rest of my life and a feed tube the rest of my life. And after the swelling and the healing process started to take place, I started to get a little bit of movement back here and there. And now I can move both my arms a little bit. I've got some good finger movement in my right hand. I can move both my legs. I got some good toe wiggling in my right foot. And yeah, so I mean, not enough to really do much with in all four limbs, but it's better than nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're right. And again, watching the video, I can tell, I know you're on skates and you're in that sling device you described, but I can see your arms moving and I see you sliding your feet back a little bit. So
yeah, that was pretty tough I had to keep lifting up my foot because the ice kind of felt sticky and like wherever my skates were pointed, that's where my feet were going. So I couldn't really move my ankles much to guide it. So I had to keep picking up my foot to readjust.
Yeah. Right on. Well, good for you for doing that. It is pretty emotional video. And again, I've tweeted it out and people can follow you on Twitter at Wheel. How do you say that?
Wheels, AKA Jay. Yeah.
Okay. There you go. Or they can just look up Justin Rayner, Rayner, on Twitter as well to give you a follow. So, I mean, you've, despite having, your life derailed, like you've told the story, you've lived a very interesting and very fulfilling hockey life that you're still in the process of doing.
Yep.
And you are a scout for the Moose Jaw Warriors. Tell us how you got into that and what your schedule is like, I guess. Your schedule would have been different this past year, but during a quote-unquote normal year, what your schedule's like.
Yeah, for sure. So basically, for the first like 3-4 years after my injury, I didn't really like hockey that much. and it's not that I didn't like the game. I was just extremely jealous and envious of people like being able to play the game that I love so much. And so like I didn't really go to the rink much the first couple years. But after that, like the pain kind of subsides and you start getting the bug back. And I started out just scouting with buddies from home, and I took it a little more seriously than them. And I started writing reports and whatnot. And my best friend, his mom works in the administrative office of the Moose Jaw Warriors. So I bugged him for probably 5 years straight to get me an interview with the GM. And she finally got me in there, and the rest is history. And that's how I became a scout with the Moose Jaw Warriors.
All right. So are you traveling a lot? What does your schedule usually involve, and what level of players are you looking at?
Yeah, I don't travel too much. I kind of just stay around the Regina area. But it's a lot of, I do a lot of WHL scouting for the team. So I'm watching teams that come in to play Regina and doing reports on guys that we would potentially be looking at for trades, or up until this past year, it was a lot of guys that would be playing for the Team Canada teams, because Alan Miller is our GM and he's in the program of excellence. So I'd be looking at a lot of players for under 18 teams and things like that. So,
okay. What do you like most about that job? What do you find most fulfilling about it?
I don't know. It's I get to watch hockey for free, which is awesome. That's kind of a dream job of a lot of people, right? I don't know. I like breaking down players' games, kind of dissecting them and trying to find a diamond in the rough, basically.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, for sure.
It's kind of like an adventure. You're hunting for treasure at the rink.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So how long have you been with the Warriors now?
I'm going into, I think, my sixth season, okay. Maybe.
So
I can't really remember. I haven't been at the rink for a while with COVID. So,
right. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. But this is a career for you. This isn't, I'm going to try it for a year or two now. I mean, it's become your career, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. They haven't let me go yet. So I must be doing something right.
The reports are coming in on time. Yeah. That's it. Justin Rader joining us tonight on Inside Sports. Okay. Also, and I'm going off your Twitter bio again for this one, and you're going to have to help me here because I don't know much about this side of the gaming world. You say that you are a competitive EA Sports NHL goalie for Adherence NHL. Yep. So is this the competitive video gaming? What's going on here?
Yeah, that's NHL esports. So basically you get a team of six guys together and you match up against another group of six guys and battle it out on the virtual ice.
How'd you get involved in this?
So my buddies kind of convinced me to buy NHL a couple years ago. And I was like, dude, like I can't really like play whatever. My hands are all like messed up and I'm not going to be able to hit the buttons fast enough to enjoy it. And I'm not going to be good and all that kind of stuff. And they got me in there and I was right. I was absolutely atrocious at skater. I can't play forward or defense to save my life on that game, but they threw me a net and I just blossomed in there and I've slowly worked my way up the ranks to become a top level competitor.
Okay. So are you on a team with people you know personally, or these people you only have an online relationship with?
Yeah. I've never met a single one of my teammates.
Okay. And you're
in person,
right? Online or maybe Zoom or whatever. So do you practice? Do you discuss strategies? I mean, how does it work when you're on an esports team?
Yeah, so basically when you're on an esports team, you'll have a team Discord and they'll have different categories in there. Like the team that I just joined for a new tournament coming up, they've got different sections in the Discord for the power play, the penalty kill, breakouts, how to dump it in, how to cycle, all sorts of stuff. So we're always going over strategies and scrimming other top teams and just trying to get better, trying to learn how to read the plays against different teams and things like that.
So what's the ultimate? Are there different tiers of teams? Can you win money if you're really good? How does this work?
Yeah, there are definitely different tiers of teams, and the top teams do make money playing this. So the top teams are your Olympias, your Entourages, teams like that. There's probably like 5 to 7 teams that can win a tournament in North America right now, just because of the skill level of those teams. And then you got another tier below that of maybe 10 to 12 teams, and then another tier below that of probably like 30 teams to make up like a top 50 ish.
And are you guys a top 50 team now or top?
Yeah, we are. We're probably in the, well, we're in that third tier, but we're working our way up.
Yeah. Well, but I assume there's thousands of teams.
Oh yeah. Not at the esports level. There's probably like, I don't know, really, really good esports teams. There's probably like 10 of them, but.
Okay. All right. Well, that's incredible. That's cool that you're doing that as well. Justin Rayner joining us tonight on Inside Sports. So Justin, you know, and again, people can, they're hearing this interview. They can look you up and read about your story as well. You're pretty open about everything that happened with your injury and with your journey. How come? Was it ever something you thought I'm just never going to talk about it? What prompted you to just kind of be open about everything?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what really prompted me to be open about it, but like living in the hospital for 2 years, I saw the two paths you could really take. Like there was one, you stay in your room and you're depressed all the time and you aren't living life. And the other one was getting back out in the world and being confident and getting on with life. And I just, one day I kind of woke up and just chose to move forward. And I wanted to live a fulfilling life again after the injury. So.
And do you ever meet, kids around the age you were who have suffered injuries? Have you sort of become a mentor and an inspiration? Mean, you probably don't see yourself that way, but you become an inspiration to other people.
I guess so. I mean, I try to, anytime I hear about a new injury or whatever, I try to reach out and just let them know I'm there. If their time ever comes, they want to reach out and get together or whatever, or chat about anything. So.
Well, good for you, Justin. Good for you for being on Blades yesterday. That was pretty cool. Thanks for sharing that video. And thanks for sharing your story tonight. You got an interesting life and you're doing great things in a lot of different areas. So good for you. You're welcome on the show anytime, man.
Hey, thanks, Reed. I appreciate it.
That is Justin Rayner. Man, what an inspiration. That was so cool to have him on the show. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving weekend. Here's what we have coming up this week for live sports here on 630 CHED. The Oilers season opener is Wednesday at 8. Our coverage will start with the City Ford Faceoff show at 6. The Elks back home to take on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. That is on Friday. Countdown to kickoff will be at 5:30. The game will be at 7. Taylor Cornelius will be your starting quarterback as head coach JB Elizondo decides to make a change and pull out Trevor Harris. And then on Saturday, we have the Oilers home to the Calgary Flames, 6:30 faceoff show, and that game will start at 8 o'clock. Three-game homestand here for the Oilers next Tuesday. They're going to be taking on the Anaheim Ducks. Holiday Monday, so we have a best of edition, and man, oh man, we've had some good stuff for you here. You've heard from Nugent Hopkins on his career as a owner of racehorses. Pete Peters, Ricky Ray, Justin Rayner have all checked in, and we are going to get to know a very, very special man when we come back after the 7:30 news, Chief Willie Littlechild, coming up. Hey, good to have you tuning in tonight. It's the best of Inside Sports on 630 CHED. My name is Reed Wilkins. September 30th was the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, and I was pleased to speak with Chief Willie Littlechild. Chief Willie Littlechild, sir, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, Reed?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for coming on the show. I know we spoke briefly earlier today, and I've seen some of your activities traced in social media and on the news today, so I know it's been a very busy day. Willie, I'm going to start here. I can go to the Government of Canada website and I can read that today honors lost children and survivors of residential schools and that it's a public commemoration of the tragic and painful history of the ongoing impacts of residential schools. I can read that, but I feel like I'm not sure if that really gets it to sink into my skin for me. How do you describe National Day for Truth and Reconciliation to people?
Well, it's one of mixed emotion. First of all, if I could say that, Reed, one is I'm very, very happy that one of our calls to action is actually being implemented across Canada. Secondly, it's very emotional for me, having been as you say, a residential school student for 14 years in three different institutions. And a little bit sad with still the denial that exists. Although I know this is the very first one, and it's a signal of a new era, I think, new energy. So it's really one of mixed emotion that I can't put into one-liner, I guess, in terms of how would I explain it.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that you were 14 years in a residential school. There have been so many tragic stories about the graves being found in recent months. How would you describe people looking back on your childhood life in a residential school? Like, was it just a joyless childhood? What were things that gave you hope and joy at that time in your life? Can do you mind taking us back there a bit?
I will. Reed, actually, I was taken to the residential school when I was 6 years old, although the law required it to be seven. So I was taken a little bit earlier, only 1 year, but still earlier in breach of the law, I think, to a situation where I'm coming from a family, my grandparents raising me, my grandpa couldn't speak English, couldn't write English. My grandmother could, and going into an institution, residential school, where I could only speak Cree. I didn't know English or French or any other language. So from that point on, it's initially a shock in terms of the environment, and then to be with a whole lot of other children. Sometimes they call the September crying month, because that's when we were rounded up, and indeed that's what you heard many times throughout the night, is little children crying in the dorm. But if you fast forward to past the abuses that I went through, like a lot of students have talked about, the physical and mental and spiritual, cultural, sexual abuse. Went through all of that, but I don't dwell on that. I like to think about more the positive aspect of it, not to downplay by any means or to insult anyone that had a negative experience. I've said a couple of times in public that sports saved my life, especially hockey. Hockey saved my life. And I say that because I used to run away from the abuse and run towards hockey. Friday nights when movies were on for the whole school, I would sneak out, put skates on, and skate by myself in the dark until the movie was just about finished, and go back and pretend I was just watching the whole movie myself. So I got through it, I think, still with a lot of pain, but nevertheless, I like to think that I learned not only discipline, but that the power of sport in situations like that, where the power of sport for me and many others actually talked about it through our hearings, and recalling that we heard approximately 7,000 oral testimonies, many of the speakers said that if it wasn't for sport, they wouldn't have been there. So it's rough beginning in a sense. Your name is taken away from you. It's replaced with a number. My number was 65 for the first school's 11 years. And one wonders what happens to a child when you do that to them. What happens to the parents when you take away their children like that? Many times I couldn't go home all year because my like I said, my grandparents being taking care of me at the time. So in spite of all of that, what happened to me and others, I still think about the positive side in terms of you can still succeed, you can still pursue excellence, you can still try your hardest at whatever vocation you want to pursue, but it's not easy. It's not easy, but it can be done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're a testament to that, and thank you for sharing that, and I'll kind of echo what you said. We are not certainly downplaying the abuses that you faced and so many other young Indigenous Canadians faced in the residential schools, but you did give us a great line there that sports saved your life and that there are things to celebrate about being an athlete and being involved in a team and being physically active and all those types of things. And I think we want to recognize that part of your life as well. Willie, what kind of a hockey player were you as a kid? Were you a speedy little scorer? Were you a bruiser? What were you like when you played?
Well, I started very late, actually. I wasn't good enough for the school team until I was a midget. Back then, midgets was a category after bantams, a category called midgets. But because I was sneaking out at night, I think, Reed, I was able to skate pretty fast, I would say, because when I was playing for the Bears, we would always, Coach Drake would have us skate pretty hard and sometimes timing us both directions around the rink and so on, with and without the puck. And I did pretty good, I think, in that aspect. But I wasn't big. I was too small to play defense, and that's all I had played from midget to college. When I got to university, I couldn't move the big guys. So Coach Drake put me on a weight training program one summer and said, I want you back here by next season at least at 170. So I lifted weights, and second assessment was, Willie, I think you better play forward. So I moved up to forward and enjoyed learning about the tradition of the University of Alberta Golden Bears hockey team in terms of a saying that is on the wall of the arena, but he actually used to tell us this all the time. It's amazing what can be done when no one cares who gets the credit. And I kind of put that into today's context. It's amazing what's been happening in Canada today from coast to coast to coast, in terms of people coming out and celebrating with us, some reflecting on the past negative aspects of our history. But the main thing is that we're all seeming to be wanting to reach the path of restoring respectful relationships and having good relationships. As a matter of fact, I was a little bit late tonight because there was a march in the city of Wetaskiwin, the most mispronounced name in Canada. It's Wetaskiwin, and that's a Cree word that means having good relations. And I think to see our country, our province, move towards that direction with us is just heartwarming, and it's worth all the pain and hours that we put into the work of listening to the survivors of their lived experiences, the most horrific stories of abuse in some cases, Reed, as you know, but in others they broke through it. And sometimes we say I'm not a survivor. I'm a thriver. So if you had a real positive mental attitude to put up with whatever it was that was being thrown at you, you could become a thriver. And at the Hockey Hall of Fame, when I was there, was a little feature there in Toronto. I said, "Well, how does this sound? I can't even believe it myself. From residential school to the Hockey Hall of Fame, and now to Canada's Sports Hall of Fame. It's just unbelievable. What, in spite, as I say, of what has been done to us as children, you can still succeed."
Yeah. Well, and your, I mean, your accomplishments and accolades, we could spend a whole show listing them, Chief Littlechild. That's absolutely amazing what you have accomplished. I do want to hit on a couple of other things, and thank you again so much for being so generous with your time. You are a part of the Edmonton Oilers Community Foundation, which are working with Indigenous communities in Alberta. They had a Hockey Is for Everyone 50-50 night with proceeds going to Right to Play and Spirit North, and some further work, I understand, this season for an Indigenous Hockey Academy, I believe. What's the story here, Willie?
The idea of having an Indigenous Hockey Academy has actually goes to back to my days when I was coaching junior hockey. I tried to do a hockey academy. And then the team folded and moved into the junior A division of hockey in Alberta. And then later on, the thought of having an academy like those that exist around around the province and around the world, actually, at least in the snow countries, the idea of bringing children together in an academic setting and using hockey to motivate them is a win-win situation. And groups have started hockey academies here in Alberta as well. And for 3 years, I think now, when I think back to the Edmonton Oilers Community Foundation, that discussion has been on to have one in Edmonton, and then maybe have one in Enoch, which is close to the city, and you can do both the school and also the playing the game. So for us, I think that's a big solution to a lot of our challenges, Reed, to for example, the early dropout rates, 95% at some points of dropping out before or during high school because you didn't have an alternative positive activity to turn to. And that's where the crime starts to happen. But if you're engaged in a hockey team or a sports team, that time is taken by that activity and really changes your path in life, I think. So, yes, we are talking about a hockey academy at the Community Foundation because of its positives. And we have people interested in working with us on that project because that's what it takes. So I'm looking forward to it myself. I'm coming to the end of my term with the foundation, but with this coming on board, I'll certainly want to be a spectator, at least in the stands even, watching young students playing hockey.
Chief Littlechild, just one more before I let you go, and I'm so grateful that all the time you're giving us tonight. What does it mean, do you think, to see Ethan Bear play in the NHL? You know, first for the Oilers, he was traded to Carolina, obviously grew up in Saskatchewan. What does a player like Ethan Bear mean?
Well, it means a lot. As a matter of fact, if you recall, Reed, one night they had his jersey in Cree Syllabics instead of in English. And people asked me what that means. It means courage and strength. It's the animal brother, the bear. That's what Musqua means to us. That's the courage and strength. So with that connection, linguistically and spiritually and physically, the mental element of role modeling enters the picture, and a lot of young people look towards watching him play, wanted to be like him. So as a role model, he did his best here in Edmonton, and unfortunately he's moved on to a different location. But then there's others as well, with White Cloud in Las Vegas. The young people really look up to them as role models. Fortunately, in my family, I'm really blessed because my brothers all played hockey at the... In fact, one of them scored the winning goal for the Edmonton Oilers Kings when they won the Memorial Cup. Another one was one of the first Canadians to go to Europe and play hockey, with a world record of the three fastest goals in hockey at 20 seconds. Another one that started in Los Angeles when they were called the Blades. And then three nephews that played in a German Division I league, who just retired now after playing pro for 12 years in Europe. So it's kind of a hockey family, I would say, I guess. So it's easy for me to spot, when I watch the young people, looking at role models like Bear, because it's a dream for them, I'm sure, when they're watching him play, that maybe they could be the next professional hockey player as well.
Yeah, well said. Chief Willie Littlechild, again, thank you so much for coming on Inside Sports. I mean, you've had such an incredible life and career, and you brought us such great perspective tonight. I do hope we can talk again someday, and I know this has been a busy day for you, so thanks for making Inside Sports and our audience a part of it. All the best, sir, and hopefully I'll run into you at the rink at some point this season.
I hope so, too, and thank you very much, and keep up the fantastic work you do.
Okay, big week ahead. We got the Oilers home opener Wednesday. We got an Elks game at home against the Bombers on Friday. This was a best-of edition of Inside Sports. You heard from Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Chief Willie Littlechild, Justin Rayner, Pete Peters, and Ricky Ray. The producer of Inside Sports is Dave Campbell. Your studio producer this evening, Cody Jansen. So tomorrow, Oilers back at practice. Bob Stauffer will have Oilers Now from noon to 2. And, of course, we have a live edition of Inside Sports from 6 to 8. My name's Reed. I'll talk to you then. Take care.
630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.